Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
Boy,
there is too much.
Yeah,
let me sum up.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is these days. There's always something. Always something.
That's
how
what
are
they
you?
Say. I'm home. That's how
okay.
I am.
Good.
I'm home
Excellent.
For the first time in a week, and you know, dealing with all the things that I didn't deal with for a week. So you know, that's
it adds
great.
Up. It adds up.
There's a lot. There's a lot. Yeah, I'm exporting files. I had a whole project that I couldn't do from the road that I didn't bring it with me. Oh, my dog is checking things out in here. Interesting. Little background noise. Projects I couldn't do. There was one that I was behind on. So now I've got like for Total Party Kill stuff, I have this enormous logic project, and I'm going through that this morning and discovering that there are very clever editorial decisions I made based on the content when we were recording last summer, basically, that now I just want to press the buttons and export it. And it's like, oh no, I did something very clever last summer that is going to require a lot more effort than I really want to put in right now. But
cleverness is one of those things that's somewhat overrated because you think to yourself, oh, this is such a good idea. And
yeah.
then
yeah.
later on, you're like, oh, no.
Well, it's the
oh,
right
no.
it's the right thing to do for the content. But this morning, I just really wanted to export the file. Like, I got to get this thing out. And it's more complicated than that. So, oh, well, it's fine. I had that moment like, why is something not happening here? And I was like, oh, no, I did something clever, didn't I? And then I had to unravel it all and realize I need to change some stuff and re-export some things. And the whole thing just, it happens. It happens. It's fine. I admire you for your skill in writing.
I feel like I know where this is
in
going.
In writing the what's going to be an iOS 14
oh,
column
man.
All so early. So early. Well done. Bravo.
You know how it goes. It's the day before. It's the day your column's due.
I know.
And you're like, what am I going to write about?
I have to remember come, you know, May not to write this column because you wrote it.
Well, I mean, I wrote it based on very thinly sourced things, and there will no doubt be more
sure.
in iOS 14, and who even knows if these things will exist in iOS 14. So there's plenty. It's a big tent, Jason, is what I'm saying.
So, well, I mean, dreams of summer in the depths of winter is what you're saying.
I you know, I need to some way to get myself through the long, hard. It's actually not been that bad a winter. It's cold, but it's not like we haven't had a lot of snow. So
oh, that's nice.
I guess it's not that bad.
We haven't had a lot of snow either.
Good, yeah. Although, well, that's not, it's no longer a foregone conclusion in this day and age.
Yeah. It's, we haven't had a lot of rain in the last month either, which is not as good. But, you know, it's fun. So what's coming? Tell me what's coming in iOS 14, Dan.
Oh, well, I have all the inside scoops.
Uh-huh.
Well, so the big rumor this week, which stemmed from a Mark Gurman article at Bloomberg, was that Apple may finally, does this deserve a finally? I know John Gruber is very picky about where the finallys go. I feel like this might be a finally. Finally let you choose default apps for your, the specifically mentioned mail and web browser, which on the one hand is maybe somewhat surprising in that they've decided to do it, if they haven't in fact decided to do it, that they've decided to do it now, you know, 14 versions into their software. And also, in some ways, unsurprising because, you know, this is a feature that has existed on the Mac since, you know, time immemorial. And it may be that some of the pressure they have felt from competitors and from regulators has made them decide, like, maybe now's the time we do this and we get everybody off our back. But I'm not ready to believe it until I see it up there on the slides, just because I feel like it is one of those things that has been sitting on a lot of wish lists for a long time and never really getting any closer to reality. But
yeah.
I wrote a piece about this like 2 years ago, and I was looking back at that piece, you know, cause I didn't want to entirely rehash it, but like kind of going over my arguments there, which is, I think that I think that this is a good decision for everybody involved. I think it's good for users who get more choice. I think it's good for developers who get the ability to perhaps be more on par with Apple's included apps. I even think it's good for Apple, both in terms of getting those possible, like, you know, bugbears off its back, but also it is something that might allow or might encourage Apple to put a little more time and effort into those programs, like Mail and Safari, that sometimes feel like, oh, we're not going to bother updating it because everybody has to use it, so why bother?
Mm. Yeah, Mail especially feels that way.
Especially Mail, yes.
Although, I imagine that there are people inside Apple who just think that email is old.
Sure.
And therefore doesn't really require a lot of attention, but,
yeah,
you know.
Too bad we all still use it, and it could definitely be improved.
And it could definitely be better, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it is amazing when people start talking about regulating companies, how things like this start to get prioritized. You know, just a bottom line, I think that is some of what's going on here is not necessarily that they're anticipating this being required of them, but that there's enough pressure that they almost want to build this in so that they can point to it and say, look,
choice.
We're working to provide more choice for the apps in the App Store.
Say what you will about that whole FUFRA. I think it's still pending, the lawsuit that Spotify was... like, hey, you know, it's this sort of negotiating tactic where Spotify said, we're going to sue you because you are disadvantaging our app on your platform. I'm not sure if that has any legal ground to really stand on at the end of the day, but certainly filing a lawsuit is putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
And if Apple feels like we could make this go away, because part of the other part of this article was that essentially you might be able to set a default music app for things like Siri and on the HomePod, which would allow Spotify essentially to be there. And I think that's also good for Apple because I think having the Amazon Echo does this. You can even set Apple Music as the default on Amazon Echo. So it looks good and it helps them because there are a lot of Spotify users who might then consider buying a HomePod. They probably won't, but they might.
Right, and it makes HomePod users more happy because they have more options. And
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, James Thompson doesn't think they're going to, you know, let him set the default calculator app, though. So
how many times did that come? I guess only in, like, the control center?
Yeah,
like, that's kind of where it comes
up? Yeah, no, it's just kind of funny that there's always someone, and that someone is always James Thompson.
Well, I thought it was funny that they specifically mentioned Mail and web browser. I mean, I guess those are sort of the big ones, but I would think Calendar is another one in there, and possibly Contacts, less so. I don't think it's as important.
The big ones are the default apps, really, is like when you tap on something, do you have...
Yeah.
So this is related to a piece that I wrote this
week.
Yes,
indeed it is, and I referenced that in this week's episode of The Rebound, because I do think it ties together nicely.
Because my complaint this week was... This was a complaining week.
Jason's complaint of the week.
Was about how, even though files exists on an iPad and there are things you can do with it and they fulfilled some of our biggest requests, I'm going to be ungrateful and ask for more, which is that file handling on the iPad is still a disaster. It doesn't exist, essentially. So, like, every time I airdrop something to the iPad, it gives me a list of like 30 apps or something that it says, which one would you like to do to open this? And I always choose the same one. Not only is there no way to be able to say, I would like a default app for this file type. AirDrop is a mess anyway, and they need to redesign that entire interface, because like a list of apps that are basically buttons and you tap on one is not an interface. It's a joke. And the fact that it doesn't even remember what you chose and set it as the default, there's one that's bolded. It's never the one I've ever chosen, but there's one that's bolded. It doesn't make any sense. But that whole interface should be different. When you AirDrop something, and this extends to the Files app and a few other places too, like there needs to be a better way of saying, I have files or a file. What do you want me to do with them? And in Files, there's even when you get info, there's an open button. It's like, what does this do? And the answer is, more times than not, it just opens Quick Look.
Right.
And then which you can just do by tapping. You don't need to go to the get info and then tap it. And on the Mac, you can say, set all files of this type to this app.
Right.
And then they belong to that app by default, and you can open it in other apps, but by default, if you tap in files, let's say, or perhaps if you AirDrop something, it shows you the default and says, would you like me to share this or open it in the default app or open it in a different app? But instead, it just gives you this dumb list, and there's no way to define it. And it's like, no, I always want this. I will also point out that AirDrop doesn't like you AirDropping different files, which is hilarious, mm-hmm. too. Imagine if you were copying files to a folder in the Finder on your Mac, and it said, I'm sorry, you're trying to copy a Word file and a JPEG. Do those one at a time.
Yeah. Trying to copy a Word file and a JPEG. That's who do you think you are?
No, one at a time. I only copy either all Word files or all JPEGs. I don't copy different things at once. That's crazy.
What's funny about this to me is that it smacks of, and we spent a little time in the past couple weeks, as many other people have, discussing iPad multitasking and the failures thereof.
Sure.
And I feel like this hits upon a same sort of a similar root issue here, which was when Apple did iOS, it tried to do away with what it thought were a lot of outdated conventions, and it turned out that people still use those.
Things
like files.
Yeah.
They tried to eliminate files, and it took them years before they backpedaled enough to be like, all right, fine, here's a file system, right? And they're still plugging functionality gaps there. But you're totally right? Like, because that's the hilarious thing about this is, your Mac does all of this fine and has done so without complaint
just fine
for 30 or 40 years. And right. It's like, why does this modern computer invented in the last decade struggle so much with this?
They changed the mechanism for OS X, but still, like, there's always been this idea that a file can belong to, or a file type in OS X, a file type can belong to an app. And it's very convenient because it allows you to do things like say, you know, when I drop this audio file in, just, you know, I want it in Ferrite or whatever. And then, I mean, there is another option here, which is actually the other part of this that I mentioned in the article that is baffling, is also what you could do, since iOS 13 introduced the concept of a download folder for Safari, is you could do what you do on the Mac, and every file you AirDrop to your iPad just goes in that folder.
Sure.
And
that makes perfect sense,
right? And then you open it in whatever, because Ferrite, like, I when I get my audio files there, like, you know, you have to bring it in and then then it goes there and you tell it, and there's multiple steps. And it's like, on my Mac, that doesn't happen. When I AirDrop a file, it just it's saved to
right.
a
I
place.
I suspect the challenge for Apple, or at least the thing that they are kind of designed their way around, is like, AirDrop, I feel like, at least when it developed.
I got tea has been delivered to me, Dan. This just ended breaking.
Wasn't from the dog.
It was from my wife, who brought it to me. The tea robot was working while we were talking, and now the benefits have come to me. I'm
speaking
a very lucky person. Sorry, you were saying.
No, I was saying, I feel like when we started using AirDrop, a lot of the use case for it were things like photos, right? And like the whole thing, and for a while, that was all you could do,
right?
You would AirDrop stuff and it would try to move it to photos.
It was a simple system designed for simpler times and not really intended for it's what you said, which is like, it was intended for the file-less operating system.
Yes, indeed.
And has now been retasked confusingly.
Yes.
For a file. So it's one of those things. I get that maybe that didn't get to it, but that was my moment of realization in writing that article, like, that should be the default, right? Like, now that we have files and we have a download folder and all that, like, for things that aren't, especially for things that aren't pictures, maybe, where you've got the photos library.
That's the question, is like, does Apple sort of say, like, well, photos are still a special case, or is that still a thing that you could reassign? Or, like, what if I want my photo to be AirDropped into Lightroom?
And that's
something?
Why I said, maybe you bring up a thing that says, what would you like me to do with these files?
Right.
Would you like me to save them to your downloads folder and set that as the default? Would you like me to open them in an app? Would you like me to take the images and put them in? And if there's multiple types, guess what? You're going to have to ask me about all the types in turn, and that's okay. Or don't ask me and say, well, this is multiple types, so I'm just going
to
save
them all to the download folder. Right. And I think Apple still really wants to avoid people using it. In some ways, it's like there's still they feel some shame around the Files app still.
I get that not everybody wants to use or needs to use the Files app. I get it. But there is that moment where you're like, yeah, but I'm AirDropping a lot of crazy files. What do you think? Do you think I'm one of those people who doesn't want to use the Files app? No, I'm AirDropping files to my iPad. Please just take them. Accept them.
Yeah. Turns out, guys, you invented a computer.
Yeah.
And a computer still has.
It's a computer, and you can do better stuff with it, and you can do it differently, but you need to do it. And it was just, it's pervasive. Like, this is the thing, is just giving us, all right, you got a Files app. Like, it doesn't solve these problems.
Right.
These problems are complicated. And I honestly don't need all the steps of, like, if there's a wave, then put it in Ferrite, because that actually is a little weird. And, you know, just put it in the folder and then let Ferrite, you know, copy it or import it from the folder where all my stuff went, or whatever.
Right.
Like, whatever.
Right.
I'm using Ferrite as the example because that's the one that I airdrop by far the most, as I'm airdropping audio files to my iPad. But, like, it goes for anything. Like, just the idea of I can copy stuff to this iPad and it just goes on its drive, essentially.
Right,
it goes on its internal storage for other apps to use.
It's funny to see how much time Apple has spent trying to design around a problem that felt like it was already solved. Like, you look at share sheets, right? Like, there are times when they are useful, but there are also times when it's like, we spent a really long time designing a whole system around the problem of we have no files. And in the end, it turned out that system is not as good as the system of files for whatever reason.
Or at least there are two kind of modes. There's like the fileless, like, let's keep it very simple, which works for a percentage of the user base. And then there is the other part of the user base that has to have them. And you need to be able to somehow gracefully as possible, allow those people to do what they want. And the reason that I mentioned this in the context of what you wrote is, you know, a lot of this stuff is very similar. It's, what do I do with an ICS file?
Right.
What do I do when I click on a mail to link? That's not a file handler, but it's a URL handler, or it's a system call where it's bringing up a, you know, a mail sheet that where if you're using Gmail, you'd rather it just open your Gmail app and bring up a new message in the Gmail app. But it's all kind of related as things that that Apple made some assumptions for the iPhone in the early days of the iPhone, and is still trying to unravel.
Right. And part of that is, in the early days of the iPhone, when everybody was getting accustomed to this new device and this new manner of doing things, it wanted to make stuff frictionless and seamless. And it did. But 13 years later, we've all gotten very comfortable using our smartphones, right?
Yeah,
like, and
exactly.
We've advanced a lot. We all download apps. We use different apps, right? Like, we're comfortable doing these things. And it feels like some of that stuff is very much stuck in that past of... Yeah. We're trying to make things really, like, simple and easy so that you get accustomed to this new technology. It's new and it's different from the way you were doing things before. And it's like, great, we've done that. Take the training wheels off now and just, like, get us back to a stage where it's like we realize that people have different needs and we're going to adjust for that.
The browser thing kills me because, you know, first off, how much time has been wasted by different apps implementing a request Google does it obviously for Chrome, but like to be like, oh, I added a feature where if you would prefer to open those links in Chrome instead of Safari, it's so dumb. Like, that should just be, if you click on a link in an app, that the system goes, all right, what's my web browser, right? That's how it works on the Mac. It also allows some really nice functionality. I mentioned this in passing in the column, where you could do things like act on it with a shortcut, or create one of those apps like are on the Mac that are really great that actually will intercept your web request and route it to a different place based on what URL it is, which is really clever. It opens a whole bunch of things up, and you know, that's pretty straightforward. I get, again, why Apple is reluctant to do that, but let's not forget that right now everything's using the WebKit engine. The reason people use Chrome is because they're using Chrome on the desktop and they want to sync all their bookmarks and all that and have a unified experience. And Safari is a, you know, it's a different ecosystem for things like history and bookmarks and stuff like that.
So
it's not, you know, it doesn't strike me as being a big security issue. It strikes me as being a, and I don't, again, I think Apple's desire to control everything is a reason why they haven't prioritized this, but I think that it's not the reason it's built this way. It's built this way for simplicity, which is like,
yes, I agree.
We have a web browser, and if there's a link somewhere in the system, just hand it to the web browser, and that they have to unravel that if they want to do this. But it does seem like a natural in these all kind of go together, which I didn't even mention another another thing, which is this the protocol helper thing, like the ability.
Right.
This is how an app can. This happened on my Mac the other week. The Twitter app just stole all Twitter URLs, and there is a system function. It's like an app function where an app can register for. It's not even a protocol helper. It can register for a domain and steal all of your links. And so instead of going to Safari, or, you know, they go. I had a case where I was in Twitterific and I clicked on a link to a username in Twitterific and it opened the Twitter app. Jeez. And showed the user. And I'm like, what just happened? And it's a similar thing, which is like, that's interesting functionality that the users need to be able to control, right? Like, I'm okay with Twitter saying, would you like me to take over control of Twitter links and open them in the Twitter app? I would also like Twitterific to be able to do that, and Tweetbot to be able to do that.
Sure.
And I would like the user to be able to say, no, right? But right now you can't.
Right.
So
right.
So these are all kind of interrelated about, it's like plumbing, it's about inter-app communication. I understand why it hasn't been a priority, but it does have the effect when you're being scrutinized by regulators and presidential candidates that it makes you look bad, and maybe that cranks it up the priority list a little.
Yeah. Yeah, so I am fascinated to see if this comes to pass. I think, like I said, I think it benefits everybody. I mean, the biggest problem for me in the past using third-party browsers, and I've dabbled in a few of them, was that it always felt kind of pointless because inevitably you would hit a link somewhere and you would be taken to Safari even if
sure.
you're like, why am I even using this? I don't want to use two browsers. Like, so I think it would get a lot of people. Not only would it get people off their back, but I think it is a commonly enough wished for feature that would also please a bunch of their users, and especially their users who tend to be vocal critics. So I think it's a good decision. I hope it is something that they're working on, but who knows? We're still months away.
Yeah, it's still all to play for. Well, I similarly have hopes that, although my thing was just couched as me being grumpy, but it's like the writing is kind of on the wall. Like if you're going to do all this work with files, then, you know, you do need to do some cleanup. And my fear is that they're going to like leave it there for another year. But the iPad OS thing, like if you're putting a list together of iPad features, this is on the list, is like getting files to work better and make more sense and feel more, you know, and do things like letting users set what apps control what things by default and having it be, because honestly, it would really be really great if I could tap on a file in the Files app and know what would happen next. Right? And it does for certain apps where I think they've registered and it's only for them. Like if there's like a Word file, I think that'll open in Microsoft Word. Like I think you could do that. Although,
sure.
You know, you could ideally, you would also be able to say, actually, Numbers, I use Numbers, or and this Excel file is here and I want to open it there. But, you know, again, it's just computer stuff that isn't there, and that it makes it a bad experience, and it makes your powerful computer seem dumb. And it's not great. I would be happy if all they did was just say, all right, multiple file type AirDrops, just go to the downloads folder now.
And it's certainly
that
certainly
would be
the
fine.
Easiest.
That would be fine. Just let's do that. So
make life easier.
Yeah. Well, we've solved everything again, and it's only we're only 23 minutes in. It's amazing how this works. It's good.
Very efficient like that.
It's good to be home. I did, you know, I did my iPad thing again where I was just all iPad. And it did strike me that I had this video file thing that I had to deal with when I got back here. It struck me again that although there are video editing apps for the iPad, I had this stuff in a Logic project, and I had that moment where I thought, or in a Final Cut project, and like, well, that's not portable. I could have exported it out and all of that, but I didn't really think about it. But I did have that moment of like, oh, here's something that's totally off the map for me in terms of the iPad, which is working on that video project that I've got back there, and also a Logic project that is not compatible. There's no and there's no Logic and there's no Final Cut on the iPad Pro. And we have rumors that there's an iPad Pro coming, and that there's an Apple event coming, maybe. Yeah. And we've speculated about like that keyboards might be a part of that because of all those keyboard things that showed up in the betas, and that might be a fancy new smart keyboard for a new iPad Pro. Great. Makes sense. They're not going to rev that hardware design, right? It's a first generation new hardware design, and it's a great design. I imagine they're going to keep that for a while. So, but they could update the keyboard. Great. Okay. But, you know, I start to think about the other, you know, what else could we do? right? What else could we do for the iPad?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. I
it's done. It's finished.
It's
all, as good as it's going to get.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
So the big thing that's been rumored is like new cameras, and it is impressive to me that Apple has gone as long as it has, you know, since releasing iPhones with multiple lenses and stuff. It has not spent a lot of time beefing up the camera in the iPad, and I realize there's probably fewer people taking pictures with their iPads, but you know, people with iPads do take pictures. Certainly the AR stuff that they've been pushing hard feels like it could benefit from better cameras. And the iPad tends to be their sort of flagship
right.
when they discuss AR features. And there were rumors of like some sort of 3D sensing camera technology. I don't have a great conception of what that might do for it,
right.
other than if they had like a feature to show off.
It's like AR kit gets better in that point. So, I mean, the feature that is still the great unexploited feature of the iPad Pro is the processor, right? And this is what I was getting at with Final Cut and Logic, which is one hardware feature that they could show off is just the power of the hardware when running software. So I floated again. I have no information. I actually kind of doubt it will ever happen. But like one of these days, you would think that Apple, like I wrote a piece about the first day, about day one of the iPad 10 years ago. Day one of the iPad, Apple said, look, here are all these apps that you see on the desktop, and we built them on an iPad. But wait, there's more. Here's our iWork suite. And it's all on the iPad, too. Like, the iPad can be used for real work. And, you know, it took a while, and that software was primitive and all that. But, like, they put their stake in the ground. But, like, it's been 10 years, and Apple's got a product called Pro. And where are their Pro apps? Their Pro apps aren't on it. They've just decided that pros can use the iPad, but if pros need to use Logic or Final Cut Pro, they can't. They need to use iMovie and GarageBand. So I reject that. And there are apps out there that show. And now Photoshop is on the iPad. So I want to keep that in my back pocket as an example. Like, they keep boasting about the power of the processor. One way for Apple to show that off is to actually put their Pro apps on the device and say, no, we are serious that the iPad is a Pro device.
Well,
and you know, so maybe here's another opportunity for them to do it, because I will tell you, the prospect of round tripping a Logic project, being able to say, oh boy, I'm going to go on my iPad, I need to take that Logic project with me, you know, and I can't do that right now. And the truth is, right. I'm far more optimistic that Wooji Juice is going to come out with a catalyst version of Ferrite,
right,
so that I can round trip from my iPad back to my Mac and back and forth, than I am that Apple is going to support Logic on the iPad. But I just think it's tragic that they have these Pro apps and they talk about the Pro uses of the iPad, and those two items just never connect. They just never connect.
And to add to that, actually, I think this was mentioned by John Gruber in a Daring Fireball post, I don't know, sometime in the last couple months. It's, you know, 10 years since the iPad came out. Still can't write an iPad app on the iPad, right? Like,
well,
there
true.
Is something weird about that. Because I think Gruber pointed out, like, the earliest Mac apps were written on the Lisa, I believe. But it was something like within a year or so, Apple had created a way to write Mac apps on the Mac.
Right.
And so it is a little baffling, especially when, as you point out, the hardware is so powerful. Is there a reason other than we haven't or don't want to spend the time porting Xcode or building a similar solution?
I think that's the reason. I think the reason is that Xcode is so old that they can't really put Xcode on the iPad. They need to build their next generation
tool,
right. development,
which is
app.
Yeah, exactly.
And that takes a long time and is very complicated. But I agree with you. It goes on the list with Final Cut and Logic, right?
Like, but 10 years is a long time.
I know. Well, I mean, yeah. it helps when you're just like, well, yeah, just get a Mac and do it. But I agree with you. And Swift Playgrounds is a nice sort of education tool.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I agree. Like, that's another question. Like, shouldn't iOS developers be able to develop those apps on an iPad instead
of iPhone?
Right,
cuz there's a strong argument for, like, Apple likes to talk about giving access to so many people to help them learn to code, and you know, it does student scholarships for WWDC and all that, and it feels like, man, it seems like it's prohibitive to say if you want to develop iOS apps, you got to buy a Mac and an iOS device, right? Like, now we're talking, you know, we've gone from, you know, maybe you could write an app on like a $500 device to, no, you need like, you know, $2,000 worth of equipment, essentially. And I feel like they'd want that in terms of them pushing for the democratization so that people, you know, you can get a more diverse, inclusive group of people who are interested in coding and want to learn how to code and do code. It feels like they should make that more accessible, and moving it to the iPad would be a way of doing that. But you're right. It's an old piece of software. It's got a lot of sort of legacy components to it. Obviously, Apple's showed off stuff like with Swift UI and the like, that it's like moving in different directions with the way it does some of its development. But yeah, I haven't heard much in a while about them doing anything in terms of app development on the platform itself. And it does, it feels more, you know, more egregious as time goes by.
I agree. But, you know, so this is, I guess what I'm saying is Apple can keep a software secret way better than it can keep a hardware secret. And although software secrets do leak out, and Mark Gurman is proof, I'm just saying, as we have these rumors of the iPad Pro getting an update, one of the things that could happen is some surprises in terms of software. It could happen. I'm not saying it will, but that's always possible because Apple could bring more Pro software to the iPad Pro. And it does, you know, I love my iPad and I do professional work on it. I honestly, at this point, I don't think I want to use Logic on my iPad. I think I want to use Ferrite, because Ferrite is a slimmer tool that has all the features I want. But if I was a musician and I needed to use Logic, I would be disappointed that all I have is GarageBand, because GarageBand isn't Logic. And Final Cut is a good example where, like, I know how to use Final Cut, and although there are impressive video editors on the iPad, like, I would really rather not go down that path. But if I had Final Cut available on the iPad, I'd at least think about it. So sure, it's an opportunity. It's a missed opportunity for Apple now. As you said, 10 years on, having the ability to develop software on the iPad would be pretty remarkable. And, like, you know, it's the case where the third parties are filling in the gaps here, but Apple is not doing it. So I don't know. Maybe that comes with the keyboard. Maybe they're like, hey, it's a keyboard and also Final Cut Pro. But who knows? It's just, as a Logic user, it really burns me that Logic on iPad is a remote control for Logic on the Mac. That's what Logic on the iPad is a remote control surface. So you can have like a big touch bar that's an iPad in front of you while you are working on your...
Clearly what people want.
Well, anyway... not a lot of me on the site this week because I was traveling and doing other stuff, but I'm back. So, you know, it's going to be busy. Boy, today's going to be a day.
Well, it's still February, I think. Let me check my calendar.
We got an extra day, too.
Woo!
Next Saturday is Feb 29. It's a bonus
there
day.
There is a rumor that there's an Apple event in late March.
Yeah.
It's floating around.
I heard that
there.
March 31st is the rumor. Yeah. That would be
just squeezing it in right there at the end of the month. I almost convinced John Moltz that March 31st was not a real day. I had to make him go look at a calendar. That was fun. But yeah, it's at this point, I think it would be more surprising to me if they didn't have a March event.
Yeah.
They've done it so many times in the past few years, and it's just June. From September to June is a long way to go without saying anything.
Yeah, and by all accounts, these iPads are ready to go out, and they're on an 18-month cycle, and they want to get them out now and clear
and
the decks.
Lines up nicely with that 13.4 beta that's currently out.
Like, exactly.
You know, you sort of spin out where that'll be in 6 weeks or so, and it's like, yeah, it seems about the time you'd want to release that.
Right. Right. So, and there's a question of where, right? Because they've been doing weird, you know, unlikely location events for that.
Boston. They want to come to Boston.
I would recommend that if you're going to do an event in March, just do it in Cupertino. It's fine. You got the site. You got the space. But they do like mixing it up. They went to Chicago. They went to Brooklyn. So who knows?
Yep. True enough. Could be anywhere.
I'm still surprised that they didn't do that services event in L.A., and I still wouldn't be shocked if they did an event in LA, just because they've gone Hollywood now, and there are plenty of venues that they could do that in LA, and that is not horribly far.
It doesn't seem like a very LA-ish topic this year. I mean, services. You're right. There's synergy
pros.
There.
I've had pros.
Yes. All pros live in Los Angeles.
That's where the pros are. What are you talking about?
I think it's just
they
it's
got
just
pro
Joe.
Football. They
it's
got pro Joe basketball. Steel. They got pro VFX. Mm-hmm. They got pro directors. They got pro musicians.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay,
whatever. Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's true. I was just there.
Yeah,
it's sunny.
Well, I mean, to me, nothing says LA like a low cost iPhone. So
yeah, it's the most LA.
Yeah, that's been out.
Things. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back here next week. Calendar demands it.
Calendar,
but that was like almost a little song.
Ha!
Calendar.
Calendar.
Until then, goodbye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.